allocated by the president.
You okay with 3 minutes?
3 minutes. Which will be 3 minutes for public forum. We have a couple of folks that want to speak under public forum. Let's get started. Barbara Schmitz, Tom Pedersen, Bill James. If anyone else wants to speak during public forum, please get your cards in now.
Hi, I'm Barbara Schmitz. I'm here on behalf of the Animal Protection Institute, also known as Born Free USA. The reality is that you all are operating illegally. You're failing to go ahead and regulate and license wildlife control trappers or nuisance wildlife control operators. We've worked with you for a number of years on this. We've come to the organization and asked you to go ahead and implement regulations. You haven't. We went to the legislature. Your organization came in at the last minute after we had worked with you the entire session, opposed the bill after we had taken amendments that you all specifically requested, and then urged the governor to veto it. We're kind of frustrated at this point. There really aren't a lot of options left. We're really not sure what it is that you all expect us to do.
Next speaker, Tom Pedersen, followed by Bill James, followed by Paul Weakland. And I also forgot to mention to everyone, please state your name for the record when you come to the microphone. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the commission. My name is Tom Pedersen, representing the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Today I'm here also on behalf of the California Game Hawkers Association and the California Hawking Club, which are affiliate members of CRPA. The issue is the certification of falconry regs for California by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. As you may recall, I spoke to that issue at the last meeting, and I'm here to thank the commission and the department for agreeing to take this issue up. I've had discussion with Deputy Director Mastrup, and he has graciously agreed to host a scoping session where the department will take this issue up and try to make some determinations as what's required for California to meet the certification requirements for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service requirements. The main reason that we're very interested in this is we want to maintain traditional hunting methods in California, and falconers are probably one of the most traditional methods of hunting. Our partners with California Outdoor Heritage Alliance and the National Rifle Association are also very interested in this issue, and we've agreed to participate and help the department in any way we can to get this certification process done. I realize the department has a lot of things on their plate, and they're short of staff, and whatever we can do to assist in that matter, we would like to do that. The other thing I would like to do is offer to the commission a demonstration of falconry practices. If at some point in time you have an interest in that, whether it's in conjunction with one of these meetings, we could do it, you know, in a very short session, either here or in conjunction with the Al Tauscher subcommittee meeting. I know the commission's much busier than it was years ago. I recall when Governor Edmund G. Brown was in office, the commission actually did horseback trips into the wilderness, and when I was a kid, I recall encountering the commission on one of their trips into the Desolation Wilderness area in the 1960s. But I realize times have changed and your time is limited, but I'd just like to leave you with that offer if you deem that appropriate. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, I'd like to take Tom up on his offer. In fact, I was telling my fellow commissioners this morning, I have a demonstration of falconry every fall when I hunt pheasants in South Dakota. My friend there has been a master falconer for years, and he has two peregrines, and we fly them against pheasants. And you've never seen such an exciting hunt in your life as falconry of that nature. But I think I expect we'd all be interested in seeing a demonstration of there's nothing quite like the relationship between a falconer and their bird.
I appreciate that, and I'll be in contact with Executive Director Carlson, and when it's convenient for the commission, we'd be happy to provide that. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Bill James, Paul Weakland.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the commission. My name is Bill James. I drove 500 miles to be here. And representing Port San Luis Commercial Fishermen Association and myself. Today, I'd like to talk just briefly under public comment under business and economics. California is having a big problem with earning money. You're about to lose the Toyota plant, as far as I read in the paper. That's 40,000 jobs. Every job is important. Small business, is you need to get profit motivation. And it can start here in the commission. What I'm talking about is I'd like to see on some of our major, whether it be a bill, whether it be something like the a fishery management plan or something, up front, we have somebody with economic training here at the meeting to help answer some questions. We have plenty of biologists. We have plenty of lawyers. We have plenty of everybody else except for economists, it seems. And in addition, I'd like to see a real, a PhD qualified economist, whether from the Department of Finance or Food and Ag, weigh in on some of this stuff. Because if we're going to go to ITQs or something like that, that might be an issue. Well, do they need 100% observer coverage? Well, observers cost $350 a day. Where's the break-even point? How big does your fishery need to be before you can even consider that? I never see this happening. And I just heard at the Pacific Council that some of the people that were for ITQs are now upset because of the way it went, because they didn't get a full explanation, and they're actually going to get less fish than they had before, but at higher costs. So I really would like the commission to think about that and find ways to get some economic input into this. One other quick thing I'd like to mention before my time runs out, because I do know that we have a three-minute time frame. The Blue Ribbon Task Force and the Fish and Game Commission have a joint meeting, I believe, coming up. And I believe that's in the Sacramento area. And is it my understanding that you're talking about the South Coast region, but you're here in Sacramento? That doesn't sound good. That's not fair to the stakeholders. You know, I remember listening to the Blue Ribbon Task Force one time. One of the members, and I won't mention a name, said, well, that's only 8%. They can go fish somewhere else. I don't believe that number. Well, you know, the stakeholders weren't there to answer that question. Economists wasn't there to help answer some of the background stuff that goes with that. So I really think you figure out something and have a meeting with where the stakeholders can actually come instead of have to, you know, do like what I did, drive 500 miles, 600 miles. Any questions?
I do. I have a question. Chairman Kellogg. All right. Thank you, sir. First off, congratulations for driving 500 miles to speak for 3 minutes. That's fairly committed, so I admire you for that. And I appreciate your comments. I share some of those concerns. I'm fascinated that I agree with some of what you said, and I don't agree with others. We have plenty of lawyers. You're correct about that. We do not have plenty of biologists, and we certainly don't have plenty of economists. So when you say we have plenty of all three of those, unfortunately, that's not correct. It's not the main point here, though. The main point for me is what you're discussing on the economics, and we statutorily are required to deal with the economic impacts of the things that we've been recently doing, and we're not doing that. It frustrates me to no end, and I know it frustrates a lot of people within the department, and certainly frustrates the wardens and the biologists, and those that are actually in the field that are having this shoved down on them, and then we don't really provide them the tools to do it. So I think those are very valid comments, and I want you to know I appreciate it.
Commissioner Sett.
Bill, thanks for being here today. And I want to agree with you that we need better economic information as part of our decision-making process. But I'll reiterate what I've said before here. Economics has to look at both sides of the equation. In other words, it can't just look at short-term costs. It's got to look at long-term benefits, which are, of course, more difficult to estimate or calculate. But whatever we do ought to be subjected to a cost-benefit analysis, so that if we're asking stakeholders to take the short-term pain of a reduction in fish catch or a marine protected area, there ought to be some idea of what the long-term benefit of those actions would be. And we have lots of scientific studies suggesting that, you know, if we protect habitat and don't take too many adults, then fish and wildlife populations can recover handsomely. But often what we get from economists is just an estimate of short-term costs with no idea of long-term benefits. And that's really only, it's a one-sided equation. So I'm all for more economic information as long as it's appropriately balanced between calculation of short-term costs and longer-term benefits.
Cost benefit is very good.
Hang on, we're not done. And Mike's correct on this. And I want to say publicly, I completely agree with where he's going with that. The problem is we're not doing the first part, so we can't do the second part. We can't do any analysis on what are the true costs. And then once we know what the true costs are, we can't do a true analysis of what the benefits are because we don't know what our baseline is to start with. And it is a very frustrating, and from both sides of this equation, because no surprise to anybody, Mike and Commissioner Sutton and I have different opinions on some of these things, but the concept of the data collection so that we can have a meaningful discussion to make meaningful decisions frustrates both of us. So I want to say I completely agree with him. We need both ends of that done, and not just one. And
anyway. I really meant a full analysis. So,
Commissioner Benihana.
The good news is that there was no economic analysis whatsoever in the Central Coast the first go around, and it was greatly improved for the North Central, and it's greatly improved over that for the South. So we are moving in the right direction. It's very expensive, very difficult to because it's all done with personal surveys, and we're doing it at the dock, so that we're not doing the back expenses, those affected by outside of the immediate vicinity of the reserves, proposed reserves. But it's a very costly, very difficult kind of a thing, and I agree with. The fact that we're not at all looking at the positive side of, you look at tourist attraction in San Diego and in that area as a result of a healthy ocean, and we're not looking at those benefits at all. So it's a tough issue, and I appreciate you bringing it to our attention.
Before you, one last thing I wanted to mention to the commissioners, that a point that Mr. James brought up about the December meeting. I just want to let everyone know that the December meeting is not etched in stone yet, the location. We don't have to notice those meetings till 10 days before that. We staff is going to be discussing with the commissioners later today about some options, about your very concern about having a joint Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting on South Coast and potentially moving that to Southern California. So that will be discussed later today under commission informational items, and we still have some time to make that decision on where that meeting is going to be.
John, for whatever it's worth, I can't even imagine that we wouldn't have it in Southern California.
Yeah.
I think this is such a major issue with so much involved, far more involvement, multiple times of the ones we've already done. And so to have it up here would be just the wrong message all the way around. So I'm completely in favor of that.
Yeah, staff has a proposal. We'll bounce off of you guys later under informational items. Next speaker, Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Again, we need to correct the mismanagement of our natural resources. You're not managing efficiently or effectively. We want to request, again, that you start talking about abalone. That was supposed to be the spearhead, the guiding light, the indicator. You have mismanaged our abalone resource to the point where you're not allowing any fishing south of San Francisco. The excuses, the reasons, and the laws that you used against the citizens of the state of California has greatly impacted them. You were created in 1870, Fish Commission, to prevent overfishing and preserve the resources for future generations. What a failure. You should open up the counties of San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Luis Obispo counties immediately for the harvest of abalones. You know that there are large numbers of harvestable abalones in this area. It would relieve the impact on the new closed areas that you've put off the North Coast with very little reasoning or scientific validity. We talk about economics. Aren't you, didn't you take the oath of office? Isn't there due diligence to do no harm? Yet you have harmed thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of the citizens of the state of California reaping economic disaster because of your decisions. It's despicable. You are harming many. And now here I am again. You've closed down my favorite hunting areas, my favorite fishing areas, the species I like to go after. And now you're taking away my dredging permit. You are manipulating the gold prices in the international market. Anybody that's invested in gold and has had any hand in the shenanigans to make an emergency closure on something that's historic in California is mining gold, the reason we became the Golden State, is on their way to hell. You have manipulated the price. You notice that right after your closure, gold's going back up. Are you people that are responsible for this suction dredge emergency closure getting ready to sell your gold now that it's going back up because you have now limited the supply on the market? These are dastardly things that you do, your power. You are one of the most powerful political bodies in California. You have power over every animal, plant, body of water, and that makes you controlling the people. But when it gets right down to it, the only control you have is over the people, the laws that you enact. So that's who you make suffer because it's politically correct for you, a stepping stone to your next higher political appointment. How despicable, foul. It's deceitful and conniving what you're doing and the excuses.
Your time's up.
That ends public comment or under public forum, our speaker cards. Move on to election of officers. I have a couple of background information for the commissioners on item two, election of officers. Just some summary. Back in 1998, the commission adopted its longstanding policy regarding election of officers as a regulation in Title 14. Pursuant to Fish and Game Code Section 102, the commission shall elect one of their number as president and one as vice president. Section 660, Title 14, also states that every February the commission selects the most senior member as to serve the president and the next most senior member as vice president, except a commissioner shall not serve more than two consecutive years as president. With the resignation of our president, Cindy Gustafson, at the end of July, we had an opening. So staff has a motion. Right now we have no public comment. I don't know if there's commissioner discussion before the motion.
Any discussion from the commission?
Yeah, I have a little. I just want to have some clarity. This election would be through February of 10?
Yes.
And then commissioner, let's see, let me think. How then what would happen is
as far as
the order of seniority, yeah,
right, and basically,
does Richard expire in 10?
No,
not expire, expire.
Right, his no, he is the following year. He's the following 11. Year. Yes, Cindy's term was set to expire in January of 2010.
Okay, and so would Jim be the president in 10?
And the way we have handled, traditionally the way that has been handled is it's up to the commissioner who has the most seniority if they want to serve 2 years in a row as president. My understanding and the history is that rarely does a commissioner serve 2 years in a row as president. They usually defer then to the next person in line. So we haven't really talked to Jim yet if he's interested in serving as president 2 years. And then the next is Richard, who has already served 2 years as president and during his current term. So I don't believe that he would be up for president then. So next seniority would be you, Commissioner Richards, and then everybody has to keep in mind that when you're reappointed, these seniority, the way it counts for officer, is starts at zero every time you're reappointed. So when Commissioner Sutton is reappointed, his seniority goes back to zero, in regards to office, becoming an officer.
Should I do the motion?
Okay, let's hear the motion.
Suggested motion from staff is the Fish and Game Commission hereby elects Jim Kellogg as president and Richard Rogers as vice president for the remainder of 2009.
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it, and that'll be the order. Just so you know, I mean, since I've been on this commission, it's all the president's served 2 years in a row. I'm not hung up on that at all. I've been president once, so no big thing to me. I could care less. So.
Okay, moving on to item number 3, consideration of certification of final environmental document, possible adoption of findings and proposed project or alternative, and final adoption of sections 163 and 164, Title 14 CCR related to herring. My understanding is from the department, we have Ryan Watanabe who wants to give some background on this. Hang on just 1 second. Mr. Weekland, this meeting we want no discussion or comments from the audience unless you're at the microphone. Remember, we don't disturb the folks in the audience or the order of the meeting. Thank you. Go ahead. When you're ready, Ryan.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Ryan Watsambi, associate biologist with the department's marine region. I'm here to provide a quick overview of the fishery and briefly outline the department's recommendations for the 2009-2010 season. The department manages Pacific herring in each of the roe herring fishery localities as separate stocks. The past three seasons, the department has been concerned with the San Francisco Bay herring stock. It is the largest spawning stock of herring in California and is closely monitored with spawning ground and population assessments conducted every season. The department's assessment of the San Francisco stock indicates it is at a historic low. And weak year classes in recent seasons may be insufficient to support a sustainable fishery. At the present level, the San Francisco stock is stressed and precautions must be enacted so that the San Francisco stock is rebuilt to a level that ensures long-term sustainability of the fishery and preserves the ecosystem role of Pacific herring, such as forage for bay and oceanic species. One precautionary measure has already been adopted by the commission at the June 25th meeting when the commission decided to adopt an emergency closure of the ocean waters fishery to protect the San Francisco stock. The department is providing the commission with the option to consider a season quota within the range of 0 to 10% of the 2008-2009 spawning biomass estimate of 4,844 tons. Due to the unprecedented low spawning biomass levels in the San Francisco stock for three consecutive seasons and the biological and environmental concerns for the stock, the department is recommending to the commission no commercial harvest or a zero quota in the San Francisco Bay for the 2009-2010 season and a closure of the ocean waters fishery beginning in 2010. Other recommendations include season date changes for the Tomales Bay fishery and a minor regulatory change to update permit application numbers for the 2009-2010 season. These are the department's recommendations for the commission. Are there any questions?
Any questions or comments from the commission?
I have one question on the closure of the ocean waters fishery. Ocean waters fishery. What's the effect of that? What are we doing when we do that?
Well,
Who's being affected, and how big a deal is it?
It's the fishery is primarily in the Monterey Bay area. It's a purseine fishery. There's relatively few fishermen, maybe two or three fishermen that actually fish it. And mostly what they are targeting is other pelagics. And when they're able to find herring and they have like an order for it, then they'll seine it up and land it. But the as part of the total value probably for those fishermen, since they are primarily for sardines and other fisheries, it's probably a small part of their income.
Okay.
Thank you,
Commissioner.
Yeah, I was just curious. The no fishing in the bay is what we can regulate, but the demise or the lack of herring reproduction is a much broader, much more difficult issue to deal with, and it has apparently a lot to do with the delta and the water flow down in through the bay and so forth. Do you see any potential down the line as you study the herring population that without the fishing is helpful, I'm sure, but what about the recovery generally? Is there any hope there that, or is it going to be like more like our salmon?
I think like many of the species that are in decline, it's environmentally driven. But there are a lot of variables in there. There's, you know, you mentioned, freshwater inflow. There's oceanic conditions. This species is very, unlike truly marine species or truly freshwater species, it is affected by a lot of variables like freshwater inflow, currents, upwelling. So it's a very difficult to assess how the recovery will. We're not really sure what the impact is by all these various. If it's just freshwater inflow, if we get out of this drought, will that improve herring spawning? I can't say. Or
okay, thank you.
For kind of a summarized, Commissioner Sutton's aware of this, but Commissioner Richards and Benninghoven, this herring fishery has been kind of near and dear to me for several years now, and from back when Secretary Chrisman served on the commission as well. And there was a recommendation from the department to shut down the herring fishery in San Francisco Bay, and we went the other direction on that recommendation and ended up with and it was because of the low biomass numbers at the time, and they thought that the fishery was going extinct. And then the next following year we ended up being right, and they had a larger biomass and better fishery than they'd had since they've been keeping records. And since that time, there's been a whole restructuring of how the department and the herring fishermen work together. And there's a the herring fishery advisory board that's made up of fishermen that work with the director and in particular Sonke. And we've made a lot of changes in the years since then. And who knows? I mean, there's still just like he said, there's still questions about how the biomass studies are being done, and the fishermen are working really close with the department's biologists, and they're working hand in hand today. There's some feeling that the Costco Busan oil tanker that crashed in the Bay Bridge is part of the problem why the biomass is down this particular year. That all being said, and there's some things being done that I've been involved in, Sonke's been involved in, with the people that own that vessel, some possible donations coming down the road where the department will be able to fund more accurate studies on the biomass and that once that gets established. And I just want to let the commissioners know that I have been working with that fishery on that, and I always said that the fishermen would be the first ones that to identify a problem, and they did it in this particular incident. And with that being said, if there are no more comments from the commission or if Sonke doesn't want to add to what I had to say, I'm prepared to accept the department's recommendation. And first of all, we'll have to have a motion for the environmental document. And we do have a public speaker on there. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Paul Weakland. Right now we only have one speaker card for this item. Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, once again, you are demonstrating the inherent problems, the lack of knowledge. We don't know. We're not sure. We have nothing but a guess. But if we close it down for a while and then we open it up, we'll take credit for it being good later. That's how we work. It's deceitful. And again, the department never shares with us the chance of mistake, the percentage of error, or the, ways that they continually change the method or methodology of their studies, the way they always redesign the study, because it's never done right twice. It's never done the same way or in the same place. And then make sure that we eliminate all the eyesores from the record. If anything makes us look bad, we eliminate it, purge the files. Oh, that's why we have a hard time here in California of being historic and looking at the trends, because the trends are boom and bust. But then we have these army of biologists and lawyers, and we have to take credit for doing something, so we're going to punish more people. And then the fact that the fishing representatives want to take a couple of years off and do other things and not be penalized later for not making any landings. Has anyone considered this? Oh, no. That is all.
Commissioners, we have a couple of motions that from staff. One will be to certify the environmental document, the final, and then the next one would be to adopt the regulation. So should I go forward with the first?
Yeah, let's go with the first motion to.
And I'm going to combine the proposed adoption of proposed project and the environmental document as one motion, and then we'll have one more. The Fish and Game Commission certifies that the final environmental document for herring has been completed in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, and that it was presented to the commission, and the commission has reviewed and considered the information contained in the final ED environmental document prior to approving the projects. The certified ED provides that there are no significant adverse environmental impacts resulting from the proposed projects. The commission finds, on the basis of the facts in the record and the environmental document, that the proposed projects and alternatives will have no significant adverse impact. Furthermore, the Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to Section 21080.5 of the Public Resources Code, hereby adopts the proposed projects or alternatives for the proposed regulatory action relating to Sections 163 and 164, Title 14, CCR, related to herring.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. On a question? No
aye.
Question?
Did you?
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no? Ayes have it. And so ordered.
And then the next item is going with the adoption, and this is of option one, which will be a 0% quota. The Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to the authority vested by sections 10505510855398550855353 and 8555 of the Fish and Game Code, and to implement, interpret, or make specific sections 10050 and several others that are listed in the ISOR of said code, hereby amends section 163 and 164, Title 14 CCR related to herring, selecting a quota of 0% of the estimated spawning biomass. Further, the commission directs staff to prepare a notice of determination consistent with the approval and adoption of associated regulations. This notice of determination is to be filed with the Secretary for Resources pursuant to section 781.5, Title 14, CCR, and section 21080.5 of the Public Resources Code. Please note the regulatory language will be included on the commission's website.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion and a second on the question. No questions. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Ayes have it, and that'll be the order.
Thank you. Moves us to item number four.
Okay, we're gonna take a 5 minute recess. We'll be right back.
Next item on the agenda.
Item number four, consideration and possible ratification of commission findings on the petition to list the American pika as a threatened species. Commissioners, we have no public speaker cards on this item. And as staff would like to make a recommendation, due to some unavoidable staffing and scheduling conflicts, you did not receive the materials until this morning, the proposed recommendation on this morning, the proposed materials. Staff is recommending that we put this over to our next meeting, which is at the early October, so they give you some time to go over the materials and give the public some time to we'll post some materials on the web, our website probably in the next week or two for the next meeting. So if I'm not really even sure I need a vote on that. I probably just need some
guidance. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Sun.
John, I agree with that because, as always, when we receive information the morning of the meeting, it's difficult even for the speed readers among us to digest the materials and come to an informed opinion. I realize we're at a stage where we're simply ratifying findings, but we do need to take them under consideration, particularly a case like this where we're being asked to advance a species to candidacy based solely on climate modeling. We do need to be careful and deliberate in our thoughtful in our review of the proposed findings.
Okay, thank you, John.
And moving on to item number five, receipt of legislative reports. You'll notice, commissioners, that we have divided this into an A and a B now to kind of separate out the Department of Fish and Game's report, which will be given by the Deputy Director, Susan LeGrand, and then B, possible consideration of commission positions on proposed legislation. Susan?
Good morning, commissioners. It's good to see you all this morning. It's busy time over in the Capitol right now. The legislature is operating on floor session only with their scheduled adjournment to date to be next Friday, September the 11th. You probably have heard in the media that the conference committee on the Delta They met for the first time yesterday. Everybody talked about their goals. They're going to be looking at four bills for the Delta and one bond bill. The bond bill is about $11 billion, and that's going to be probably by Assemblywoman Caballero. As far as the department goes, we're still looking at about 30 bills that are active in the legislature that have the potential to impact the department. Last day to amend any of those bills will be tomorrow, Friday, the 4th of September. So at that point, we should have a pretty good idea what things are going to look like in their final state. Beyond that, you probably heard that Senate Bill 670 dealing with suction dredging was signed by the governor. Right now, sitting on the governor's desk, another bill that was important to the department is Senate Bill 481, which dealt with the management of wildlife, specifically birds, near airports. Give you a quick update of some of the bills that I know that you folks have taken positions on and looked at. Assembly Bill 49 by Assemblymember Huffman that deals with commercial fishing and restructures the fee schedule. That bill is currently sitting on the Senate floor waiting to be taken up. Assembly Bill 571 by Assemblymember Saldana dealing with lobster management is awaiting is on the Assembly side on concurrence, so it's awaiting its final vote on the Assembly before it heads to the governor's desk. Assembly Bill 708 by Assemblymember Huffman, that's the bill that deals with fish and wildlife poaching. It's also on Assembly concurrence, waiting for its final vote before it goes to the governor's desk. Also in the same location is Assembly Bill 1052, which is by Assemblymember Caballero that deals with the Bay Delta Sport Fish Enhancement Stamp. Let's see, Assembly Bill 1217 by Assemblymember Monning dealing with sustainable seafood passed off of the Senate floor yesterday, so it's on its way back to the Assembly and will show up on concurrence sometime in the next couple of days. Assembly Bill 1442, Committee on Water Parks and Wildlife, it's an omnibus bill that has about 20 different parts in it dealing with fish and game types of issues, and it's on Assembly concurrence, so it will have its final vote probably today, we think, and then will be on its way to the governor's desk. And finally, Senate Bill 778 by Senator Wiggins that deals with the salmon stamp. That's been moved to the Assembly inactive file, and we got word from the senator's office a couple days ago saying that they're going to leave it there for the remainder of session, turn it into a two-year bill, and continue work on it next year.
Well, Susan, are you saying we're 6 for 7 out of the bills we've supported?
It looks like it. Looks like it.
Great.
So,
good news.
With that, that's what I have today.
I'm aware of the difficulty in having a department position on a bill because it has to be an administration support or opposition position. And at our last meeting, we did take, as a commission, action on some legislation based on a committee report. There's a huge array of legislative issues that you have in your written report, but there's no indication of what positions we have on them, either for the administration or for the commission, or which ones were sponsored by the Fish and Game Department.
Well, none of them are sponsored by the Department of Fish and Game, first of all. Second of all, we have received very few, if any, approvals for positions by the administration. And without that official approval from the administration, we cannot indicate, because of the confidentiality between the department and the governor's office, we are not allowed to indicate what support or concerns or whatever the department may have on those bills.
So when you're talking to legislators, as a legislative representative of the department, you're not able to indicate a concern about language, any changes, any suggestions of any kind?
We can, before a bill is introduced, we can talk freely between ourselves and whomever about concepts and concerns that the department may have on an issue. Once it becomes a bill, we can't speak at all about the bill unless we're providing very specific technical types of information without approval from the governor's office.
And that of the group that we had before us, which mm-hmm. quite a few, most of which are going through the legislature. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us which ones, if any, the Fish and Game Department is supporting or opposing or has a position on?
You know, that list that we ran through, we do not have an approved position on any of those bills at this time.
On any of these bills?
On any of those bills. Oh, I take that back. I take that back. We have a neutral position on Assembly Bill 708.
Mr. President. So that's a lot of effort for not much output, I would think.
Yeah, we do. We do
put. I understand.
We do put a significant amount of work into our analysis and telling our story to the Resources Agency and to the Governor's Office in hopes that we will get positions on bills that we think are really great or bills that we have concerns with, so that we can work with with the authors and the committees to be able to take care of our concerns. So, it's not because of a lack of effort on our part.
Susan, I appreciate the update. Just to follow up on Commissioner Benninghoven's question, assuming that many of these bills that you've talked about this morning move through the legislature and are approved and sent to the governor for signature, the next question then becomes, what is the department going to recommend in terms of signature or veto? Mm-hmm. And I hope that we can have a conversation about that before the department transmits its recommendation to the governor on that, because obviously we have an interest in a number of these mm-hmm. bills that will likely be going forward from the legislature to the governor for his signature. And I would hate to see a situation where the commission is supporting legislation and the department feels compelled to urge the governor to veto it.
Again, a lot of those recommendations are going forward right now. We're working on our enrolled bill reports all day long, every day right now, to get that information transmitted to the governor's office. Unfortunately, if we can't share the information that is contained in those enrolled bill reports. Those also fall under the same confidentiality that the bill analysis and any other types of legislative communications between the department and the governor's office.
Any other comments? Sankey?
Yes, commissioners, good morning. This issue has frustrated commissions as long as I've been involved with commissions. So I understand your bewilderment to whatever degree of frustration. One of the things we can do and we have done in the past, though, is you can certainly express your views on these bills and inform us, and then we will, certainly take that into consideration and due diligence when we come up with our confidential positions, but that's unfortunately the only venue we really have right now. But so if you have views on these bills, you definitely need to let us know what they are. That's helpful.
And we're always willing to hear your comments and discussions on any piece of legislation. Just unfortunately, we can't always share back with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
On item 5B, consideration of commission positions on proposed legislation, the staff is unaware of any new positions at this point, but I want to follow up and let you know that the staff is working on a draft policy for the commission to consider. We don't really have a commission policy on how to deal with legislation in our set of policies, so we're working on that. We're also polling and looking at several other boards and commissions within the state on how they deal with legislation and what kind of staffing they have for that. We'll be bringing that back to you at a future meeting. I also want to let you know that we are informally working with a bill author on a piece of legislation that may attempt to alter. Right now in code, the commission, it is mandated to meet a minimum of 10 days a year, or 10 meetings a year, with no more than two meetings being in Sacramento. So there is some language that we're informally working with an author on possibly reducing the minimum amount of meetings to eight. That wouldn't mandate us to only meet eight times, but that would give us some flexibility during lean years. It also would give us the chance to meet in Sacramento up to three times a year. Those are being considered informally right now.
Mr. President, one other comment. For those who think that weighing in on legislation is entirely discretionary for the commission, let me just offer one thought. As part of my confirmation process this year with the Senate, one of the questions that they have asked me is, what is the commission doing to help alleviate some of the well-known problem of our shortage of game wardens and shortage of funding for the department in general? And to the extent that legislation will help raise money to alleviate some of that shortfall and these problems, like a warden stamp or increased penalties that go directly to the department's coffers, to me that makes legislation directly in our best interest and that of the department. And so many of the bills that Susan just mentioned, of course, this year, we supported because they would help raise revenue for the department and the game wardens in particular. And I think that, to me, causes this issue to rise to a higher level of importance than maybe would otherwise be the case, that these bills actually are trying to find new sources of revenue new and innovative sources of revenue for the department and the wardens that could help alleviate the critical shortage of wardens that we have in the state. So that's at least part of my motivation to weigh in on legislation, and I think it ought to raise the importance of that issue of doing that for all of us here on the commission.
Thank you, Mike. I think we're all on the same page, and that's why we requested staff to draft up a policy for us. Even though we don't have a policy, we have an agreement that whatever legislation we entertain now will come from one of the subcommittees. And until we get that policy in place, I think we're okay continuing along those lines. So we do have some public speakers.
Yes, on item 5, we have three speaker cards, Virginia Hanley, followed by Paul Weakland, followed by Bill James.
Hello, Virginia Hanley with POPAC. And I'm sorry, I don't have a copy. Things are changing so quickly in the legislature. I'm sorry, I don't have copies of my legislative alert. But I wanted to bring up a number of the bills that you have mentioned. AB 708, I don't know that this was one of the bills that the commission endorsed. Because I have concerns that the commission just seemed to swallow all of these bills. I don't recall any significant conversation about it. The bill outside of 708, most of all, is just very much pro-hunting, more hunter opportunity, open up private property for hunting, whether they want it or not, whether the locals want it or not. I was very distressing how after I'm told, and we're all told, that the commission doesn't take positions, and then at one meeting they take a slew of positions on these bills. I don't know how many of you actually read these bills. The 1442 was, as she was saying, 20 different parts to it. I don't know how many pages, 40-some pages. Anyway, I'll get to that. But anyway, 708, we're very glad about that bill. And why the department would have to take a neutral position, it should be certainly one of support. And I would imagine that that we're all in concurrence about trying to deal with poaching. There are other bills. The AB 979, we do not like Tom Berryhill's bill. It's really just trying to shove down the throats of all the locals, whether any hunting, or whether they want it or not. They're not to have any power to say anything over it. It's just ludicrous for that to be taken away from the locals. The AB 1442, before I run out of time, I worked very hard. I was very upset about 1442 and starting up hunting contests. It's not fishing derbies. It's not catch and release. These are hunting contests. And I worked very hard to try to get that out of the bill. It was a committee bill. I wasn't supposed to have any controversy to it. Yet they put in any number of measures are in that bill that are not good. But I tried to get out at least the worst of it, and I'm happy to say that we finally did. So there will be no hunting contests with these game species. The other, AB 1423, about the hunting clubs, all of this is for the share program. It's all for opening up private property to hunting. And I want this commission to get to its original purpose, and that is to protect the resources. You are not a hunting club. It's not, that's not your purpose. It is to protect the wildlife and the resources, and that has to be your priority. And I just see things going into bills, into policies, that your priority is to just increase hunting opportunities. Thank you.
Commissioner Richards.
Yeah, I have a question for you. I want to appreciate your comments there. They're very thoughtful, but I'm slightly confused on the last statement. Are you suggesting that we should not promote hunting and fishing opportunities?
I don't think that it should be your priority, and I see that in these bills that you're supporting, that's what it is. Like the 1442, the Wildlife Conservation Board and the department, they have to prioritize areas most wanted for access to hunting. If the board leases any property, that property must allow hunting. All of these... why should it be constricted that way, that the only good use of this property is to open it up for hunting?
I don't think it can't be leased. The only good use was for hunting.
It says if the board leases property, they have to provide hunting on that property.
Right, but that's different than saying it's the only good use.
Well, I mean, why do they think that they have to absolutely require hunting on property that should be saved because it's good habitat for wildlife, that it's good for the resource?
Okay,
why
so I want to be clear.
Value?
Your position would be there would we have no hunting or fishing then?
I'm not saying, I did not say that.
Okay,
but it should not be restricted that you can't lease the property unless that property allows hunting. That's going way over to the other end of the spectrum.
Okay.
I think it should be neutral on it. Depends on the property, depends on who's leasing it, for what purpose, but it shouldn't be restricted that, no, you can't lease this property unless you open it up for hunting. I don't think that's neutral on the issue.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner, just so you know, we're always going to have differences of opinion from people, but And some of the new commissioners may not know, but the president of the commission sits on the Wildlife Conservation Board. And while I'm there, I promote public access and hunting fishing opportunity on any property that the state buys or leases with taxpayer money.
Paul Weakland, followed by... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a point of clarification what Commissioner Kellogg just mentioned. A lot of the dollars we get, not only to operate our lands and to purchase lands, are from sportsmen's tax dollars for the express purpose of that. And most of our hunting lands, or the lands that we buy with those dollars, they allow a lot other uses. Hunting and other activities are very compatible. We design it that way. But there's a reason we support hunting and fishing access. It's part of our mandate under the law, as it is the commission. So there's no mystery. And if you look at the department's website, we have a mission statement. Protecting and managing the state's resources is priority one. Then it's for the use and enjoyment of the public. That's where the other uses come in. So they're compatible. Protecting, you need a resource first to use it. So there's a logical order there. And so that just as a little background.
Paul Weakland, followed by Bill James.
No, thank you.
Bill James.
Commissioners, Mr. Kellogg, President, Bill James. We have an opportunity. I'm looking. I Xerox off 1217, and this is such a comprehensive bill. Defining, or possibly defining, a lot of different terms that may be different than what the stakeholders may be seeking. So, what I think would be a really good idea is if early in the season, the legislative season, which is around February, when the bills are introduced, we get a list of bills and what they're about, or we all could do that. But I mean, and we meet. And I would suggest, I think the Marine Resources Committee would be a good place to do this and go over. And I think starting with this 1217 would be a really good training tool to go over what definitions, because there's the word sustainable can be defined certain ways by some people, and it can be defined certain ways by other people. And we need to come up with something where we know what the word sustainable means when it's in a regulation. And that vetting out can't be done in 3 minutes here and a microphone and up there. You don't have time to do that. Now, later on, I'm going to talk about the Marine Resources Committee because I'd like to see it videotaped, because there's two commissioners that sit on that, and that's fine. But the other two are not privy to that discussion. And there's nothing better than being able to go to a tape now, the way the AGP video does it, and move that slider bar to the second, and you can find and start. You could be so economical with your time. This could be a great training tool, and we could really, really speed up the process. So I'd like to see us really think about these rather than, I was blindsided by that. I started reading this. I went, I don't know what this means, part of it. I mean, a lot of it I did, but so I'd like to make that suggestion that we take it up in the Marine Resources Committee as soon as possible.
Mr. President. Bill, thank you for those comments, and you'll be glad to hear that's exactly what you're suggesting is exactly what happened this year. I don't know whether you were able to attend or not. I guess not, but we discussed the pending marine-related legislation at our last Marine Resources Committee a couple months ago, and that's where we developed a list of seven bills to support. After discussion with all of our stakeholders at the Marine Resources Committee meeting, we then brought that list, Commissioner Richard Rogers and I brought that list back to the full commission. We had a discussion here, and we sent a letter to the bill sponsors and the governor's office accordingly, because you're exactly right. The Marine Resources Committee, President Kellogg has asked the subcommittee, the committees, to be the source of legislative recommendations, and I think that's exactly right, the right way to handle it, because you're right that the committees have much more time and ability to go into depth than we do here at the commission. Just to set your mind at ease on AB 1217, because as I've disclosed before up here, I had a significant hand in drafting 1217. AB 1217 is a pro-fishing bill. It would provide subsidies from the Ocean Protection Council to help California fisheries underwrite the costs of getting certified internationally as sustainable fisheries according to the international standards that have been accepted and are in wide use around the world for sustainability. And that would allow our commercial fisheries to access green markets in Europe and places like that where they can get more money for their fish. So the whole idea is to support and encourage and promote and subsidize sustainable fisheries in California and allow them to open up new markets for their products and in different places around the world. Because as you know, commercial fisheries is a globalized industry. We import more than 80% of our seafood in the United States, and we export a lot as well. And the whole idea of AB 1217 is to allow and encourage commercial fisheries in California to compete and be competitive on a global scale in markets that are increasingly focused on sustainability in world fisheries.
Can I ask one quick question? What fisheries on the West Coast that we're fishing commercially or we're not fishing sustainable? Is there any fisheries that we're... I don't think that there is any that we're not fishing sustainably already on the West Coast here.
Well, the idea behind 1217 is that you may believe that, but you have to have independent evidence of that, Bill, and the only mechanism that exists today to provide independent evidence of sustainable fishing is the Marine Stewardship Council. It's based in the UK. It has set independent standards for sustainable fisheries to which fisheries all over the world are being certified. And if fisheries can meet those tough standards, they can compete on that world market for sustainable fisheries. And the whole idea of 1217 is to get California fisheries into that system so that, because governments always say that their fisheries management is sustainable. We know that that's not the case in many parts of the world. and the international certification standards provide an independent verification that fisheries are in fact sustainable. So if you're right about California fisheries, as I think you are, then 1217 ought to be broadly taken up by California fisheries that want to compete in that world marketplace. And so I'm proud to support 1217. We have the support of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and a number of other commercial fishing organizations on the West Coast. A number of California fisheries have already applied for such certification. The albacore fishery out of San Diego has already achieved that certification. It's not easy to achieve, but on the other hand, it serves as a very powerful signal to the world market that our fisheries are sustainable.
That concludes public comment for item 5. Move on to item 6. Receipt of Department of Fish and Game informational items. 6A, receipt of Department of Fish and Game Director's Report. We have John McCammon, Chief Deputy Director, with us.
Mr. President, thank you very much. I bring regards from Director Cook, who's married off a son this last week and so is taking the week off. As I think our last report indicated, the legislature had kind of sucked all the air out of the building, the legislative building, with budget discussions up till last month. That air sucking kind of got shifted to the Delta here in the last 2 weeks or so, and the department is highly engaged in those Delta legislative discussions. As one of the key regulators, the key state regulator on Delta activities. In the interim, though, activities continue, including the passage of the Wiggins bill. The department was sued about the operation of suction dredging and a court order issued in July told us to quit issuing permits for suction dredging. The Wiggins bill passed at the same time and was signed by the governor, which precluded the activity of suction dredging within the state. So neither of those were departmental determinations, though it is a departmental permit that allows for it, and regulations which allow for it no longer until the department completes its environmental impact report, which is underway. The activity of suction dredging in the state of California is precluded from occurring. One other kind of area of significant activity for the department that is you'll see rising, I think the commissioners see this often, and that is in wildlife interactions. It has to do with seasonality. This is the time when those interactions become significant and of concern to the public more often, and it's impacted by issues like fire and so forth, which cause wildlife movement. And then two other items. Traditionally in October, the department has been the primary sponsor and developer of the American River Salmon Festival. The festival has been conducted in October each for the last, I think it was 15 years as I recollect. It was canceled this year. This is one of several areas and increasing areas where you will see direct impacts resulting from the 15% reduction in employee staff time as a result of furloughs. It's a direct relationship to that furlough requirement that we're not able to put together the Salmon Festival this year, which has disappointed a number of our key support organizations and is a concern for the department going forward. Natural Resources Agency of the state has issued the California Climate Adaptation Strategy, which talks about formulas for developing corridors, refugia, generally land planning and other activities which influence climate change issues and adaptation. The department is currently developing internal documents to integrate into that adaptation strategy, including a reworking of our state wildlife action plan, which is required as a part of that process. So we are engaged in that activity as well. With that, I think that's everything I had to report for the director.
Any comments or questions? Commissioner Sutton?
Just two questions, John. Thanks for your report. My understanding from the department, just to be clear, based on what I think is an erroneous comment from a previous public speaker, my understanding is the commission has no authority and no role in developing or issuing or promulgating regulations to on the suction dredge mining issue. That is entirely within the purview of the department.
That's correct. Now governed by direct legislative action, yes.
Right. So it is not an issue that you will bring before the commission. Okay.
Correct.
Second question. We, as you know, we have a memo from the department on the petition to list the American pika. What would be really useful, to me at least, is to have and I don't know, we may have been provided a copy of the agency's climate adaptation report, because, as you know, the pika listing petition was based on climate modeling. The allegation is that the pika will become endangered or threatened because of climate change. The extent to which the California state government is putting together or adopting an adaptation strategy seems like it would be pretty relevant to the question of whether or not to advance pika to candidacy status. I guess my question is, are you planning any analysis of how that adaptation strategy that the department has put together or the agency has put together might impact or affect the continued survival of the pika?
Yeah, good question, Commissioner Sutton. If you don't have a copy of our latest adaptation drafts, I'll work with Executive Director Carlson to make sure you guys get any drafts that there are currently, because we would really appreciate your input. Getting to your second, more specific question, the whole climate adaptation strategy effort is still in its formative stages, if you will, and is working at a much higher policy level right now than getting into specifics. But the logic is, of course, if we come up with some agreements on how to help steward our natural resources through these sometimes potentially dramatic climate changes, at some point it will get down to things like, so what do we do about our subalpine population or alpine populations we have in the state? Because, as you know, the word is it's going to get warmer. Some of those species are capable of adapting, some apparently not. So, and there's a whole suite of species actually that would come into play there. So I think that's a couple of layers down still, but it will definitely at some point be providing some direction on what we might be able to do for critters like that.
Thank you. Thank you, Sankey. That would be really useful to me, is to see some analysis of that, because obviously the petitioners, as I read the petition, are trying to use the California Endangered Species Act as kind of a forcing mechanism or an incentive to put those adaptation strategies into effect. Well, if the department and the agency are already doing that, then maybe we don't need that. So it would just, I'm having trouble, and I've had trouble from the beginning with this petition, seeing what the fix is here. The California Endangered Species Act itself doesn't really help to list the pika as endangered, other than if that were to trigger state action on an adaptation strategy, well, okay, maybe that's a reason to advance the species to candidacy. I don't know. I'd just love to see an analysis of the connection between the two.
One point of clarification, that climate change adaptation strategy document that was issued by the agency in early August is out for 45-day public review, so it's not, in fact, the final document at this point, but we can make sure that you have that public review copy.
Jim went to the restroom, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking down. Where is he? John, thanks for the report. A couple questions come to mind for me. How many environmental impact reports is the department currently processing?
It depends on what you mean by processing. Whether we review hundreds of CEQA documents. We produce a few of our own, too. So I'm not quite sure specifically what, when you say processing, what do you mean?
Well, John was just, he mentioned that you're currently, in his report, processing an environmental impact report on whatever he was talking about.
Oh, on the suction dredging.
Yeah, suction dredges. And so how many of those are we doing right now?
That's a good question. I don't have the number off the top of my head.
2 or 20?
Oh, it's probably closer to 20.
Okay. How many CEQA documents are we reviewing at today? 100 or 1,000?
In the thousands, although it's down dramatically as a result of the
in the thousands.
And our obligation in our reports to the legislature is that we will review 50% of those documents. So a number, half of the documents, the CEQA documents that come in to the state, get no more than a cursory. That one's not going to have significant impacts. 50%, however, get at least a significant desk review.
Okay, well, thousands would mean at least 1,000 of them are actually going to have to do that. How many people do we have doing that? How does that happen? What's the logistics within the department? How does that occur?
I don't know, Ann, you got something you want? I know that we've added positions as a result of a CEQA fee increase last year.
We have. Ann Malcolm, I'm Department of Fish and Game's General Counsel. And as you probably know, we have several different roles in CEQA. We are a trustee agency, meaning we review CEQA documents that are prepared by developers out there who want to put a Kmart in Mojave ground squirrel habitat or propose some other project. We're a responsible agency, that's our second hat, when that developer wants to put the Kmart in there and we have to issue an incidental take permit or a stream bed alteration agreement. We have some regulatory role associated with it. And then we have the third hat, where we act as a CEQA lead agency, meaning it is a department program, it is a department prepared EIR. So when John talks about the EIR that we're preparing for suction dredging, we are the lead agency for that project. At any one time, we have, you know, a few of those going through the department. We also, we have a staff in our region because they get notified from the State Clearinghouse, which is sort of the filter for environmental documents getting put out to agencies that may have an interest in them. So we have staff in the field that work on it, and then we have a program in headquarters that also works on CEQA. Much of that activity is funded through an environmental filing fee that, as John mentioned, we just had increased in a proposal that went through the legislature. So I would say we have, you know, at any, many of our biologists in the field, and I can't give you a number, spend some of their time working on CEQA projects, as do people in headquarters.
Okay. Thank you. I always hate it when someone says this to me because I sometimes question whether they're sincere, but the "with all due respect" comment. I do respect you. But I'm challenged that on a monthly basis, the director's report that you're giving today is so, and I'm going to call it superficial, that it doesn't help me as a commissioner determine are we doing the correct things to assist the department or to guide the department. And I would like to have something more meaningful, and I think I'd like to ask the commission and the chair if, you know, I would like to see optimally next month, but certainly within 60 days, some kind of a status report on what's going on within the Fish and Game Department. What is it? We have literally thousands of mandates. What is it we're doing well, which we do a lot of things well, and what is it we're not doing at all because we don't have the money or we don't have the resources, the personnel or the equipment or whatever, so that as a commission, we can sit up here and make determinations on relevancy and value on actions that we take. But right now, you know, we get data presented to us, and someone says, "This is a great idea. You know, would you like to clean up the water and save the animals?" Of course, who doesn't want to? But what is the effect of that? And that's what I don't ever feel like I'm getting as a commissioner, and candidly, none of us are getting. So can we get a better report? How do we go about getting something that really tells me, tells our entire commission, what are we doing? You know, because today I've already heard three or four times, generally speaking, at a busy meeting, we'll hear a dozen times, we're unable to do this because of funding. We're unable to do this because of personnel, furloughs. The Salmon Ribble Festival is a important activity, but my instincts are fairly insignificant considered a lot of things I know we're not doing that we're mandated to do. And I'd like to know what those are so that we can get our hands around them.
I think that's a pretty appropriate question for us to ask, and especially in view of what the budget situation is in the state and for the department now. I mean, we have mandated things and some newly mandated things that we're having to take care of within the department that are going to eliminate things that we've been taking care of for a long time in order to do. So I think it would be appropriate for Commissioner Richards' request to go through and have a report back from the department. Maybe you can't do it that quick, but within the next couple of commission meetings.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I was dove hunting in the Imperial Valley on the opener, and I'm getting my ear bent down there by some guys talking about, and I'm going to forget the name of it, but a huge piece of land that was given to us 5-6 years ago that the department's not been able to do the studies on that thing to allow any access within that property. This is not on my radar screen. I've never heard about it. I haven't seen it. And I'm thinking, how come? Shouldn't we really know about that? So it's those kinds of things that's not what's getting done. And that's what I want to see. And also, I'm genuinely interested and want to hear our successes. Mm-hmm. What is it we're really doing a good job with? But I think it's important for us. And so however that happens in a formal request or what I don't know what I need to do there, but I think it would be really good for all of us.
Our director's got some comments before I go back to you, John, that may help us get through this part of our discussion.
You know, I appreciate the depth of this request, Commissioner Richards, and one thing I wanted to remind the full commission that basically Sankey and I were tasked with coming back to you this fall with a new run at another work planning session between the commission and the department, and to me this probably would dovetail right into that as far as the depth of, and we could actually take a half day or a whole day and get into detail on a lot of what your questions are.
That last one was dicey on the value.
Right, and we understand that, and we are and we're taking.
And John, you have to remember, it's Mike and I were talking earlier when we were chatting about attorneys. Sometimes it's the questions you don't know what to ask that are just as important. I don't know what we're not doing, so having a work planning session and saying, how are you doing about that 5,000 acre piece down there in Anza Borrego or wherever, well, I don't know to ask the question. Right. So those things have to come from the department. And I'm good with a work session and all those kind of things, but I'm looking for something a little different than that. A report on, I'm going to call it a status report. What are we doing well? What is it we're not doing that we're mandated to do? I'm not really talking about the optional stuff. What is it we're not getting done?
And in particular, things that the commission can help the department with when they're identified.
Then we can be proactive about something versus reactive.
Well, if I may, Mr. President, I understand and concur in a lot of ways with your frustration about the information flow and the things you hear about that the department is doing that don't come before the commission. I understand that issue, but recollect that the department is a separate entity than the commission and has separate mandates and obligations that are totally independent of the commission's direction. So that's a distinction that I think it's important for
it's
you
It's not
to
important
keep in mind.
To me. I want to know what you're not doing. I'm not trying to change that process, and I appreciate it, John, and understand that. But what I'm saying is, if there are some things we can help on, some we can't, and you're correct. But if we understand the magnitude of the issue, then it may make a difference on the new things that we bring down the line for you and say, okay, if we're going to do X and Y and Z aren't getting done, how do we fix Y and Z? Get rid of them? Don't do it at all? You know, change it? You know, whatever. But we don't know that right now. And so it's just very difficult to make good decisions on tough issues when you don't have all the facts. And I feel that we need them.
President, thank you. I would recommend, this is not a new issue, and from in your position I can completely understand that, because you tend to hear about everything that's not working. It's rare people come to you and say, hey, thanks a lot for doing that, that was great. You generally don't get those. And so having kind of a knowledge base of what we are up to and some of the successes, it kind of helps balance what otherwise appears to be, you know, you could look at us as being very incompetent and dysfunctional, which we're not.
I hope you heard me say my first thing is I know we're doing a lot of good
things.
And I really want that report as well, because I think that is important for the balance side.
Right.
So don't misunderstand that I'm under. Matter of fact, I'm not casting any aspersions. I just want the data.
Right.
So
and the context is everything. What you're asking for here is some context on what it is we're doing and that workload. We are an incredibly diverse. We got 2,000 plus employees running around like chickens without their heads off right now, trying to do all kinds of things. It's a big thing to ask for us because of that diversity and complexity. And so I would like a chance to sit down with your executive director and kind of figure out a way to hand this to you in bite-sized pieces that works. For example, we've done similar things in the past where we'll have our environmental services program lead come in and talk about those activities, things we're doing well, things that are we don't have resources for. Then we could have our wildlife functions come in and talk about wildlife programs, fisheries, blah, blah, blah. Because it's a big, this is a, you're asking a lot, actually, and I think you should have it. It's just how do we create it and develop it and deliver it in a way that's going to be meaningful to you?
I know it's a lot, concept you had right there sounds potentially workable for me. I think it's always important that whatever happens here, it's coming out of the director's office, so that we have someone's got to be in charge, someone's got to have ownership to it, someone's got to acknowledge right or wrong. Down the chain of command wouldn't be accurate, but I think it always needs to come from that. And I know it's a big request, but this is a big job. And we have a lot of tough decisions to make here, and we just got to have better information.
Well, one other thing I'd like to mention, and Sankey and I and John and Don Cook probably need to kind of put our heads together. There is a document that's prepared twice a year by the department and the commission that goes to the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies called the State of the State. And it's basically a six-month update. And the department puts a lot of work into that document, and it's pretty comprehensive. And, you know, it's passed out at the WAFWA. I need to do a better job of getting that to the commissioners, but that might be something we could use as a basis to kind of go down this road, because that's a pretty comprehensive report that goes out to the Western directors and other commissioners.
So, what's going to happen?
Well, my recommendation is the department sit down with your executive director and kind of come up with a game plan on how best to develop and serve it up, essentially, timing. Because we'll want a chance to discuss about what we have available and what if there's missing parts, how long it might take us to put that together. And then I would expect Executive Director Carlson to kind of consult with you on how you might want it ultimately to be delivered.
So when that happens, John, you can contact me and we'll agendize it on the agenda so we have a formal.
That moves us to 6B, update on automated license data system. And as a reminder to the public and commissioners, we've been keeping this on as a monthly update just to keep track of where we're going with this.
John McCammon, Chief Deputy Director of the ALDS Automated License Data System project, remains on schedule for December 2010 implementation date. You'll recollect that one point a year or so ago, that date was looking like it was moving towards 2012. It is now firm back at 2010. Active Network, our contractor, continues to be a positive influence on the project. New contractor executed the contract change with them last October. GFG plans to provide an ALDS demonstration at your November meeting here in Woodland. So we're going to bring in the system and show you how it works. Now, your e-license project, which was a subset of that project to get sport fisheries online, that has been in operation for 4 months at this point. Began May 26, 2009. Since then, we've sold over 12,155. We've sold 12,155 licenses, over 14,500 transactions. Our customer satisfaction, which we survey as a part of the activity, remains above 95%. So, very few complaints. I think it was 9 last time I saw the number. It's fully operational and it's transitioned to operational activity. We've gone through a lessons learned effort to make sure that we capture what implementation of the sport fishing portion has as implications for implementation of the whole thing. The primary thing we learned is combined public relations effort is necessary at rolling it out, and both ALDS and the department are working collectively towards a 2010 rollout of the overall system and the public relations associated with that. And we're intending to do it end of the year, this year, dry run, to increase sport fishing license sales in December. Sales highlights this month is down. It's very typical. August is down month. July is a high month, so we're seeing not unusual trends online as the same as we do in retail operations. So it's I think a pretty good success story at this point.
Yeah, this is one of the pieces that we get to talk about that are the good news, and it is a success story, and I am very, very pleased, particularly with that December 2010 all-in date. That's great news. And Commissioner Sutton and I are very anxious to buy our sport fishing licenses online November.
Good deal.
We're looking forward to that. Maybe everybody, but certainly Mike and I.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Can you remind me whether we're going to be able to buy all of our stamps in addition to the licenses on through the ALDS?
Yeah, ultimately, yes. All the things, there are certain activities within hunting where you have to actually show something to a responsible person. So those will require to come in to get those. But other than those kind of items which require showing something, it'll be online.
And as a point of clarification, even with the hunting, it's a one-time. Once you've, for example, verified you had a previous hunting license or a hunter certificate, it'll be entered in our database. Then we no longer need to see that. So part of it is building the database, and that as it builds, it improves the efficiency of the whole system.
Item 6C, update on state water bottoms lease template.
Sankey Mastrup. Good morning, Commissioners. You have just recently been transmitted a compendium, I'll call it, document transmitting aquaculture leases of state water bottoms, feedback and information that had been previously requested, drafts of the two aquaculture leases up for renewal, and numerous informational appendices attached to that document. It's for your information, and it pretty much is the state of our understanding and knowledge on this issue, and it's at your... It is now up to you to decide how you want to proceed with it, but we have now transmitted everything we can on these issues on state water bottom leases. And Devin's here to answer any specifics, if you have any, right now.
Just from I got got this information a couple days ago, and we're making some progress on this. The lease is getting a lot better. We're not there yet, but it's a lot better. And then we've got our first somewhat more detailed analysis of what the expenditures on aquaculture are. Like I said, I just got it 2 days ago, I think it was, and my unfortunately printer was down, and so I couldn't get it printed out. But I've got it here, and I would guess by next month we're actually going to be able to maybe move forward on executing some new aquaculture leases. So slowly but surely, we're inching up on it.
7D, I'm sorry, 6D, update on enforcement. Chief Foley is not with us today, but we have Assistant Chief Rob Allen, one of my favorite wardens of all time.
That's only because I checked him goose hunting and didn't find him in violation. Good morning, Commissioners. Rob Allen with Enforcement. On a positive note, I would just like to inform you that we graduated 21 new game wardens on August 11th. Those wardens are all currently out in a 13-week field training program scattered throughout the state, so we have new resources on the ground. Hopefully after that 13-week training cycle, most of those will become solo and be out there enforcing our rules and regulations. We've been busy in several areas. Dove season opened Tuesday throughout the state, so wardens were diligently out checking dove hunters. I haven't heard if the numbers were higher or lower than they have been in the past, but I had the opportunity to get out and work in the field a little bit. And the area that I worked here in the Sacramento Valley was the hunters. There weren't as many as there normally are. However, there were still some violations, but the activity was low. The wardens up on the North Coast have been, they're right in the middle of the 10-day salmon opener that's up there. And currently the activity is high, but the success is low. The weather has not been cooperative. The swells have been fairly significant, and so that's hampered some of that activity. I understand there's one group of fish that they located, but they're fairly small. Compliance is fairly high. They have the regular violations of mostly gear with barbed hooks and those sorts of things. A couple of significant cases that have taken place in the last week. Up in the northern part of the state, just this weekend, game wardens were working a night shift, and they saw some suspicious activity that they closed in on. People out and about, not using lights very, very much, vehicles driving blacked out, those sorts of issues. So once they closed in, they realized instead of a poaching type activity, they stumbled on a marijuana garden operation. During that enforcement, they contacted two individuals in a garden at nighttime and gave them some commands that they failed to follow. One of the officers was a canine officer, deployed the dog, and the dog was able to apprehend one of the two suspects. Once daylight came, I realized that they had about 1,200 plants in the garden and about 500 pounds of processed marijuana ready to be shipped to the street. So they were able to make one arrest there and get rid of some plants. In Southern California, wardens have been following a poacher for the last couple of years that they haven't been able to apprehend. They had information on him that he was selling lobsters illegally, taking them out of season, those sorts of things. They surveilled him. They'd set up on him. They'd try to go to areas they knew he frequented without any success. So they turned to technology. So last week in the middle of the night, one of the wardens was electronically notified that that person was near the coast. He called some of his partners, and they went out. They located the vehicle. They couldn't locate the suspect. And things don't always go as planned, and they lost the vehicle. So technology once again helped them, and they were able to locate an area within the city that the vehicle was parked. And so they found the vehicle once again, and they found the suspect in a 24-hour donut shop. One of the game wardens was in plain clothes and entered the donut shop just in time to hear the suspect advertising they had fresh lobster for sale. So he told the individual he needed to get to the ATM machine to grab some cash and he'd be glad to buy his lobsters. So it turned out the individual had 24 live lobsters, freshly caught, most of them undersized, and they were able to make a good out-of-season commercial lobster sales case on an individual they've been chasing for a couple of years. So hopefully the court system will educate that individual. But those sorts of cases are going on throughout the state daily, and the enforcement folks are busy. That's it.
Because of the resale, that's a felony, is that correct?
No, it's a misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor still?
Yes.
Even when it's resold?
Yes.
Huh. And so what's the likely outcome from the individual standpoint in terms of a penalty?
The penalty can be up to $15,000 in that specific case for lobsters. So it could be, you know, it's a misdemeanor with a correct. With up to $15,000.
Commissioner Sutton.
I must say I enjoyed the report this month, the written report in which the suspect, the marijuana suspect apprehended was, quote, transported to jail after being treated for dog bites, unquote. But my question is, Rob, can you update us on the status of the, I'm going to get the name wrong, but it's the auxiliary warden program that the department is initiating? It's a
The Ward Reserve program.
Ward Reserve. Yeah.
We are in the process of coming up with ways to get that up and running again. One of the ideas is part of the new personnel, the additional 15 PYs that were approved in the governor's budget this year that I believe are still there. Two of those positions were going to be designated to oversee that program, one down in Southern California, one in Northern California, to try to get that program up and running. It's still in the planning stages. We need to make sure we keep those positions on the books, and it's something that we're looking forward to in the future.
The reason I want to be the first to volunteer for that program and just make sure that the part of the qualifications is previous federal law enforcement experience.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, under 6E, other, I just want to ask Sankey to say a few words on a recent Cabazon-Greenlean reg change that the department was enacted under its authority.
Yes, actually, commissioners, the department recently in mid-August took action under authority granted to us by the commission to manage both specifically commercial take of Cabazon and Greenling. In the case of Cabazon, we adjusted the trip limit to 300 pounds. That was to spread the catch out a little longer in the season, so it gave fishermen something to catch for a longer period of time. Otherwise, it would have exceeded the quota for the year. And the other one was Greenling, where we closed the season because they've reached their annual quota total and shut down the season. So those, again, were under authority to kind of manage the total allowable take for those two species so we could respond more quickly and get a more accurate output in terms of catch versus bringing this to the commission at every time something like this happened. If there's any questions?
We have three speaker cards for item six. Paul Weakland, followed by Tom Raftikin, followed by Jerry Carnow.
No, thank you.
Okay, Tom Raftikin, followed by Jerry Carnow.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the Commission. Tom Raftikin from the Sport Fishing Conservancy. A couple of things. One, 6C update on state water bottoms lease. Very important. You're looking at how aquaculture affects, you know, basically state lands. And my suggestion would be is take a broader look. Right now, we're mandated Marine Life Management Act, Marine Life Protection Act, to take an ecosystem-based approach. Right now, the federal government is looking at marine spatial planning. Take a look at all the waters offshore and get the big picture. This might be done in conjunction with the State Lands Commission, but you know, you've got an awful lot of things out there beyond just simply aquaculture and beyond just fishing. You've got derelict gear, trawls, industrial. There's ways to synergistically use, you know, commercial segments that actually make an awful lot of sense there. So just a quick comment. The Marine Resource Committee might be a good place to look at that, and then again, use that in conjunction with the State Lands Commission down the road, but how do we manage everything that's under your venue? You can take a very broad look like that. Enforcement, we're glad to hear about 1442 progressing down the line, and again, the warden stamp in particular, we thank the department for adopting the language that we submitted to the department on that, and also a couple of thank yous. Thank you for Commissioner Sutton for helping that along the way, and also a special thanks to President Kellogg. Jim, this was something, the warden stamp was something that you had a vision of, I believe, a couple of years ago, and it looks like we actually can get some hard dollars out for the wardens right now, so thanks on that. One other quick thing, Commissioner Richards, you'd asked about, you know, how does the department look at all these things? If you really want an outline of the department and what they do, take a look at the budget. And if you look at the budget, how the budget's going in, you make your comments in advance, you can help determine exactly where they're going on these things. Thank you.
Jerry Carnow.
Morning again, Commissioners. Thank you again for the time I get to discuss common goals with you all over the last couple of years. We understand you have taken on some tough jobs and have to make some tough decisions. I provided you with a letter from the Fish and Game Wardens Association voicing concerns that we have regarding to the safety of our fish and game wardens in California. We understand the need for the commission to move forward with mandates, and wardens should be there to implement them, but they have compromised our ability to do our jobs and our safety. If you make decisions to move forward with mandates, give us the tools we need to enforce these rules. That means more game wardens in the field and the equipment that we need to enforce those rules and regulations. Do not implement any new significant regulations until we have these tools. Without that, you're putting wardens' lives at risk. We're the ones who put the rubber to the road for you guys. We're against and will oppose anyone who will or continue to add mandates that will endanger the safety of wardens without giving us the tools to safely enforce these mandates. We can't do the job now with the mandates we have in place already today. In fact, it should be mandatory that you don't do this to us. Every time you implement a new mandate, you put us in harm's way again and again and again until one of us is going to get hurt, and it's already happened. Please, if you have any questions, I encourage you to ask. Thank you.
That concludes public comment on item number 6. Moving on to item number 7, receipt of commission informational items. 7A, update on status of final statement of reasons regarding changes to section 670.5, title 14, to list the longfin smelt as a threatened species. Commissioners, I just want to give you an update that the final statement is proceeding. We did receive a late comment letter, and staff is working up a recommendation on how to deal with that, and we will bring that to you in the short term in the future. 7B, update on possible course of action regarding exotic frogs and turtles. Recall we discussed this back in the
Are we going to hear this today?
We are. I want to bring it to your attention that something came in late, and the staff is working up a recommendation on that. We don't have it totally worked out right now. My understanding is that we will be able to discuss it during exec session to an extent where it falls under potential litigation. So we'll be bringing that to you during exec session.
I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem.
Didn't get all.
No problem. 7B. Update a possible course of action regarding exotic frogs and turtles. Back in the spring, we had this on the agenda and discussed it, and
the commission asked myself and Sonke Mastrip to kind of come up with a course of action and bring it back. Since that time, as everyone knows, the department state workers have been put under a mandatory 3-day furlough, 15% cutback in its work time and capabilities. With that and with the, well, I'll let Sonke say a few things, but my recommendation is that this still be tabled as due to the furloughs. But I want to also talk with have Sonke pitch in a little bit. The problem is the department still does not have a clear course of action on how to deal with this issue. And I would like to hear a few things from Sonke. And we have public comment on this also, of course.
Yeah. Commissioners, as your executive director pointed out, we have been discussing this and trying to get our heads around what would be involved. This is a huge workload. It will involve extensive stakeholder work. And frankly, it's not one of our top priorities. I mean, you heard about the Salmon Festival. This one just doesn't hit that magic list that we're going to focus on right now. I do think at some point we need to figure out what we are going to do here, but and from our point of view, it's just not on our top 10 list. And we're willing to proceed, but boy, this is just not going to be easy. And we have that other list of other things we need to be doing are much more pressing. So I don't know if I can add anything more to that.
Question, Mr. President. Thank you, Sonke. We certainly have discussed this for years, and in fact, long before I came on the commission. And I'm very mindful of the increasing regulatory burdens on the department in the era of declining budgets. On the other hand, I read the letter in our packet from Miles Young, who is a former, I guess, a retired supervising game warden in San Francisco, and from Judd Hanna, former member of our commission, urging us to take action. Maybe we can make this simple for the department. And I want to suggest that we put this on the commission's regulatory agenda to amend Section 671 to simply ban the importation into California of all exotic frogs and turtles and these animals sold in these live animal markets. There seems to be abundant evidence that these animals are more, as Warden Young suggests, more than a threat, but an active, these are active predators of our native wildlife. There seems to be no reason that we should allow these things into the state. And maybe we can just cut to the chase and get it done here. And of course, I may be completely naive here to think that it would be that easy. But I'm mindful that the department has more important things to do. But I'm also of the opinion that the commission is pretty united on this. It's been before us forever. We are constantly criticized by the legislature and others for dragging our feet on issues where the commission could have been proactive. And this seems like a perfect example of a situation where we could take action before the legislature compels it. And we have lots of evidence that that's necessary and appropriate, and that these exotic animals are threats to our native wildlife. And I, for one, would just like to do it, get it done, after all these years, and move this to regulatory action so that we can put this issue to rest and not have to keep revisiting it and taking more and more of the department's time and effort.
I'd like to get a feeling from the rest of the commission, because we have been discussing this for a long time. And it's going to, I mean, this is going to set a precedent for a lot of things that these commercial people are promoting in their shops and stuff. So we need to make sure that when we do this, we are doing the right thing. So, Commissioner Benninghoven said this is too new to me to have anything to say. But Dan, you got any? I just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
I'm going to concur with.
I don't have a problem with what Mike said.
No, neither do I. I mean, I'm going to concur with Mike what Commissioner Sutton's saying. The challenge and cut to the chase and do it. The naivety of him or me, is like, why don't we just say, okay, it's illegal to have them in California, and I'm sure it's much more complex than that. So,
in a minute,
Sonke, why don't you tell us exactly how complex that is and what I mean? I'm the concept that we should not have any invasive species brought into our state and sold particularly to be sold to the public so they can be let out everywhere. I mean, we see this all the time. I just saw a great, was watching Channel Surf and saw where there's these invasive species in the Chesapeake Bay.
I can tell you that it was a pretty long, drawn-out process to stop the glowfish from coming into California.
Well, and they've got these invasive species in the Chesapeake Bay. They're just decimating it. And a guy, they finally kind of got to ground zero. The guy who admitted he mm-hmm. released them as a ceremony mm-hmm. from his native country, was letting the fish go, and it was going to, whatever. Help his wife, I think, who was sick, and now it's just a catastrophe. And so that's the last thing we need to have happen here, and we should be proactive on it. But what does that really mean that to implement that?
Sonke, maybe
I'm in full agreement that we need to nix it.
Before you answer that, maybe I guess the suggestion I'm making is that we enact a flat ban on the importation of these species into the state of California, and then we carve out whatever exceptions are necessary to satisfy the legitimate uses of these things. Aquaculture, for example.
I almost don't know where to begin, but I'll start somewhere. I mean, first off, your request, I mean, we talked, I think, the last time we had in-depth, we actually said, logically, if you're really interested in the resource, you would have banned everything not native right from the get-go, and then authorize things. Unfortunately, in this state, that's not how it started. It was a free-for-all, and then we've been trying to cut off the targeted key species. And we've been doing that all along. When we see a critter that's particularly threatening, we'll come to you and say, prohibit that. It's really backwards, but that's the system we inherited for a lot of different reasons. So fundamentally, what you're requesting to ban it is actually regulatorily rather easy. It will be complete chaos, though. Because you'll be impacting a very large pet industry. You'll be impacting, you'll have to decide what you do with everyone's existing red-eared slider permit program. I mean, cost, expense, hassles. There'll be no outreach other than in front of you. You have set a pretty high bar to do outreach before. We wouldn't have any time or staff to do that, just as a warning. This will not be a minor issue. I commend you for saying what really needs to be done, but Carlson and I were really talking about, how would you do this so that there's an orderly scoping, involvement, stakeholders working through all these bugs, and there are many, and then bringing it to you kind of ready to go your route will be exciting.
Let me ask you something, Sonke. And again,
I'm not afraid of it, but it'll be exciting.
Yeah, I know. You guys are awesome with that. But let me ask you something. What's wrong with what's forcing us to continue down the inappropriate path that we're the flawed path that we're on? What's stopping us from banning all non-native species in the state, and anything that there's an exception on, it's got to come to us and let them do all the work and give us the documentation to review to say why we should allow it. Why can't we do that?
Nothing really. I mean, there may be, and I'll have to consult. There may be some commerce issues and a few
and
of that.
And the inevitable
specific,
lawsuits
right.
we get and all that. I mean,
really nothing. And nothing. All we are is working with the legal logic of the current
system.
It seems
to me that why don't we correct the flaw? Why don't we do it correctly and just say, look, have the department staff craft the language that says we're just going to ban it all and acknowledge that we're going to make exceptions and that we will develop a protocol for those exceptions. Who said that?
I agree with that. Sonke, I'm not suggesting we ban possession of these animals. because I think you're right, that would be a nightmare to enforce. I'm suggesting we ban importation into the state of California, and the problem then goes away after about 5 years. There are none left because they're all dead. And then if there are necessary and appropriate exceptions, they can come and make the case to the commission that they should have an exception from this. But the general rule would be no importation of exotic wildlife into the state of California, period. And then we make exceptions for certain cases, aquaculture being an obvious one, but there may be others that we could entertain. Let them make the case to the commission for that, not the department. I don't want to see the department engaged in a lengthy and complex regulatory process. But, you know, in my experience with putting regulations together, we sometimes assume it's going to be a lot more complex than it really is. And it's almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We engage in elaborate stakeholder outreach, which makes the proposed regulations ever more complex, and pretty soon you've got 50 pages of regulation when actually the issue is fairly simple. But again, I may be completely naive, and we may end up with more excitement in our lives here than at the commission than we anticipate. But our job, as I see it in part, is to take some of the heat off the department, do our job of promulgating regulations that are sensible, that are not difficult to enforce, that are that take as much of that burden off of the department as possible.
Based on that, and I can't really argue with it other than it'll be interesting, is I would recommend that the commission contemplate agendizing a scoping discussion about this issue at one of the next meetings, where basically is you have an intent to do a rulemaking that would ban all importation of non-natives, and at least scope it to get some input. That'll help, I think, you determine what you're getting involved in, and then we can go from there. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah. You okay with that? No?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Okay, that's what we'll do.
Commissioners, that moving on to 7C other, there's one other thing I'd mentioned earlier that we want to bring up. We'll get to speakers for item 7 in just a second. We're not going to skip you, Virginia. As I had mentioned earlier in regards to Bill James' concerns about our December meeting, at this point is scheduled to be in Sacramento. We are also scheduled at this point to have a joint meeting with the Blue Ribbon Task Force for them to update us and bring us up to speed on the Southern California region.
December what?
Right now the date on that is December 10th and Friday the 11th, except Friday the 11th is now a furlough day and no employees are supposed to work that day, state workers. So we're looking at a possibility of having Wednesday the 9th and then Thursday, December 10th. And we're trying to nail that down and a location. If the commissioners give me the nod right now, staff can work at moving this meeting down to Southern California. We have saved a great deal of money by being in the Sacramento region this year for all of our meetings. But I think, as I've heard from public testimony and commissioners, having the meeting in the Southern California region is very appropriate.
Right. And Southern California is L.A. South. You know,
right.
That's where the
bodies right.
are.
Last year in November, we met at the, if everyone recalls, we met at the Huntington Beach.
I do.
Their public, their council chambers, no charge, and it was
very
a great,
nice.
Great, great facility. But if I've got the nod, we can work on that and bring back a more solid proposal on location and logistics next month.
Definitely.
Okay. Public speakers for item number 7. We've got Paul Weakland, Eric Mills, Virginia Handley.
No, thank you.
Okay. Moving on to Eric Mills, then Virginia Handley.
I'll take Paul's time. Good morning, Commissioners. Eric Mills, Action for Animals out of Oakland. I'm glad you're taking on this frog and turtle issue. I appreciate what the commissioners had to say. With all due respect, somebody said this may not be in the top 10 agenda for Mr. Meistrup in the department. It's been number one for me for 15 years. just a little bit ahead of the warden situation. The packet that you just received, refresh your memory, this very commission had hearings on this issue in 1997, 1998, received over 2,000 letters in support, including from former Resources Secretary Hugh Johnson, Bob Arns, the Fish and Game Wardens Association, Zeke Grader and the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen, United Anglers, Center for Biological Diversity, Sierra Club, in the last 10 years, all of these folks. I might point out, too, that Ms. Gustafson and Mr. Rogers are in strong support of this. Should remind you that we get about 2 million American bullfrogs coming to the state every year, many of which are released into the wild where they eat baby ducks, game fish. Recent studies have shown that more than, I think it was 62% carry the chytrid fungus, which is has wiped out entire species around the world in the last 15 years, I think a lot, close to 100 now. All of these animals are diseased and parasitized. We've had 25 necropsies done. It is illegal to sell such animals for human consumption. And I've heard the department say over and over, well, the frogs and turtles are here, so what's the big deal? Let's get on with it. Well, you don't just throw up your hands because the problem is here. You try to rectify it and stop the import of any other exotic species coming in. They predate upon native wildlife, such as the red-legged frogs, the western pond turtles. I have a photo of a bullfrog eating a baby western pond turtle. All diseased. We don't talk about the cruelty, but it is, it's an animal Auschwitz in the markets. I go a lot, and it's all I can do for this, not to jump over the counter. I must take more than a little umbrage. Somebody said that the department has a lot to do and we don't have the money and we're putting wardens on furlough. But by God, we've been working, what, 2 years now on the MLPAs, and the wardens were opposed to that, and you did it. This problem predates the MLPAs by some years, and I want some resolution before I keel over. I'm getting a little long in the tooth for this. This is a resource issue. There's major support across the board, and you need to get it done soon. I'm concerned that somebody like Senator Leland Yee from San Francisco would do some legislation, which you will not be happy with, nor will I. There's just a lot of support for this. It's a no-brainer. We've done this before. It's not a big deal, it seems to me, just to do it. If you can do the MLPA, by God, this should be a cakewalk. That's all I got. Oh, one last thing. If you have this scoping session, I suggest you have it in Sacramento. We had one in Chinatown in San Francisco 10 years ago and damn near had a race riot. Police in full riot gear. One of our people got knocked to the ground. Scary stuff. But it's a big deal. But as somebody said, the Buddhist ceremonies still quite often release these animals into the wild, frogs and turtles and most everything else, to appease a god of some kind. But it's very bad for the environment. And you're going to get into some sticky issues, but it's your job to protect the resource. And what I heard today, I was very pleased. You might recall, too, that Judd Hanna and Bob Hattoy and Mike Flores were very supportive of this, have been across the board, but I've seen no action. Talk's cheap. So let's get it on. Thank you for your time.
Eric, I have a question, if I could.
Mr. Sutton.
One of the things you included in your packet for us was a letter from the California Game Wardens Association of 2.5 years ago urging us to take action on this issue. We now get a letter today from the same association urging us to take no further action to create new mandates that would burden them with additional enforcement responsibilities.
Right.
I'm hoping that this is an exception to that request from them because what we're suggesting is an import ban rather than a possession ban, which, right, as Shonky points out, would be very burdensome to enforce.
I think it would ease the wardens, job load. If there's no animals coming in, they don't have to do this. I worked closely with Miles Young for the last 10 years, and he says there's been a major increase in these animals in the markets over the years, and it took you call Caltech now, and the guys don't have time to go to the markets anymore.
My question, Eric, though, is... presumably, if we enact this regulation, it would ban the importation of live animals.
Right.
To your knowledge, and I admit I have no knowledge of this industry, would the people who import these 2 million bullfrogs a year, would they be able to import dead bullfrogs for food,
sure,
as an alternative? Would that be a viable alternative, or do they have to have them live?
I think just the ban on the live animals is my main concern. That's the resource protection. I mean, a frozen dead frog is not going to bother the environment here. But I should repeat, too, that all of the turtles are taken from the wild in the other parts of the country.
And I realize California. Importing animals dead won't do much for the pet trade, but but for the food industry, presumably that would be okay.
Okay. Yeah, I would have no real problem with that. So, thank you.
Virginia Hanley.
Virginia Hanley with Paw Pack. Concerning that last discussion about them coming in alive or dead, I do think the markets want them alive. I don't know how much of a market there would be for them dead. In fact, that's the whole idea behind the live animal markets. They want them alive. They pick them up and shake them and poke them, make sure they're still alive. But I really want to thank you very much for your comments and this resolution to go forth. I've been dealing in legislation for almost 40 years, and always the issue of enforcement will come up. Well, if it can't be enforced, well, why are we bothering with this? They have to have all of that laid out ahead of time. And I found it is best you get it on the books. Other things develop from that, of whether enforcement problems, and you can always come back and fix it if it needs some technical amendments or things happen. Like, for instance, to prohibit the importation, one thing, too, you have law-abiding people. And these markets are very visible. They're not really hidden away. Maybe the pet trade might be a little more underground sometimes, but as far as the markets, you can see them. They're practically on the sidewalk. So you can have a lot of people that will comply just because that is the law. If we do see them in the markets, well, then you would say, well, they're having possession. And so then you're saying that wouldn't be illegal. I think maybe a possession for sale as opposed to somebody that just has them as a pet. I had my little red-eared slider when I was a kid. Died when he was 3. I thought he died of old age. I mean, you know, nothing in these stupid little plastic bowls they had with the... with the plastic palm tree, those poor animals. But I want to thank you very much for having the resolution to go forward. Thank you.
A question, Virginia, for you or Eric, and again, I'm going to display my ignorance of this industry. Years ago, I was involved in an effort at the federal level to ban the import of exotic birds for the pet trade. That we were successful. There was a federal law passed in 1996 or so to ban the import of live birds for the pet trade. However, the alternative in that case was very clear, and that was captive breeding. Mm-hmm. Captive bred bird is a better pet anyway. My question is, to what extent is there a captive breeding industry for any of these exotic turtles and frogs and so forth within the United States, or are they all imported?
I think they're all imported, and the issue with the captive breeding, say with the turtles, is, well, I mean, my guy was 3 years old. He was only about this big, so you want to get them to market size. There's not many people are going to keep them for that long to get into market size, so I don't know how much aquaculture would enter into this. The frogs, they're... A lot of them they're bred. Eric can speak more closely about the frogs. I think come from Taiwan or South America.
Yeah, all of the frogs coming into California are commercially bred, and mostly in Taiwan. They're American bullfrogs. As I said, 2 million come to the state every year. Bullfrogs have to have live prey. That's why they're so difficult to raise in captivity. I'm not sure what the Asians have done, but they're doing it well. Almost unknown in this country. There's some soft shell breeding programs in South Florida. Of course, Florida just passed a ban this year, banning all commercial take for the food markets. But again, all of the turtles are taken from the wild and other states in this country and then imported into California, and they are not native. We have only one native turtle, the Western Pond Turtle, which is about to go belly up probably, thanks in large part to these imports. The Chinese, historically, they wanted live animals because they had no refrigeration. A live animal proved that the animal was healthful and okay to eat, which is a lie. We found E. coli, Salmonella, Pasteurella, Giardia, one case of malaria. I'd sooner eat a dead rat, quite frankly. And Salmonella is rampant with these animals, but the health department won't touch it, for political reasons. That's why I'm hoping the commission will do the right thing, which is within your mandate to protect the resource. Everybody seems unanimous on this. All it takes is the will, I think. So, and again, I was just talking to Mr. Carnell. I don't think this is going to impact the wardens in any way. I know they're overwhelmed now. We need more money. We need more wardens. But I think this is going to ease their workload. If there's a ban, most people will, cop to it. Even when we had the wardens, they quite often didn't have time to come with CalTIP. Save your breath. There are more issues on their, important issues on their plate. But as far as the animals are concerned and the public health and the environment, I think this is just top. So hope you can move forward on this. Thank you.
You know, Eric, I've got it. You know, you were really doing well there until you said it really isn't going to impact the wardens, and that's just foolhardy. I don't know if you heard them standing up here. There isn't one thing we do, not one thing, that doesn't adversely affect them. It's their job, and that's what they're supposed to do.
Sure.
But trust me, it will affect them.
Yeah. So it'll be low priority, though,
it
right?
It doesn't matter. It will affect them.
Okay.
So it's inappropriate to say it's not going to affect them because it is going to affect them.
But I think we'll ease their load rather than make it harder if the ban were in place.
We'll see. If you listen to Sonke, he's got me scared to death what's coming. So,
But again, bottom line, though, I think that's irrelevant. It's the right thing to do. Let's do what we can and then go forward. I work very hard on getting wardens pay equity, too, to no avail thus far. Our green governor doesn't think it's very important, apparently.
Yes. Yeah, we all are very mindful of the burdens on our wardens. Just one other note that I would point out, and that is federal law should be helpful here because the Lacey Act under federal law prohibits the importation of wildlife that it's in violation of state law.
Right.
And that means that federal wildlife agents would be able to assist in import investigations at the ports of entry, such as San Francisco and Oakland.
Right.
So that could be helpful in limiting the burden, additional burden on our wardens.
Certainly. And the state law says if the animals are found to be parasitized or diseased, they have to be destroyed or sent back to point of origin. That is not happening.
Sonke?
Yes. Just as a point of clarification, there was some misstatements to one of your questions. There's actually a very extensive captive breeding program. A lot of the attention has been focused on the food species. Most of the diversity of species are actually propagated for hobby. A lot of herps, frogs, reptiles that are collectors, hobbyists. So there is a lot of captive propagating and will be affected by this, and you will hear about this, of course. So there's a whole bunch of venues here that will come to play. So it's risky just to focus on the food markets because there's a lot more going on than just that.
Yeah, I was speaking only to the food commercialization of the pet trade.
You got any more speaker cards?
Not on this issue.
And it's moving right along.
Eight subcommittee reports and recommendations. 8A, Marine Resources Committee.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple of notes on the activities that we've initiated in the Marine Resources Committee. At our last meeting in Monterey, we began to look at the southern rock crab trapping industry, and we authorized the creation of an ad hoc working group on rock crabs, which met in Ventura on August 28th. Our marine advisor, Dr. Schumann, presided over that meeting. 18 people attended, primarily southern rock crab trap permit holders and a handful of individuals looking to get rock crab trap permits. I want to thank Roland Takayama from the Enforcement Division for attending that meeting and providing valuable input based on his experience in the field. The group explored ways to balance concerns related to a mechanism to allow new participants to enter the fishery against possible overcapitalization of the fishery. Our marine advisor is going to continue working with the department and stakeholders to finalize a suite of recommendations and present those recommendations to our next Marine Resources Committee meeting. So that on the rock crab, that work proceeds apace on rock crab trap permits. The other thing that I wanted to report on that the MRC is involved in is the Marine Life Management Act, our evaluation and lessons learned study of the MLMA. You'll recall that we initiated that study because our scoping exercise for the MRC determined that about 80% of what our stakeholders were concerned about had to do with implementation of the Marine Life Management Act. So we initiated a lessons learned study funded by the Ocean Protection Council earlier this year, along with the department and the OPC. In early July, the evaluation team released the first of three reports under that MLMA evaluation. The first report is a background report on the history and implementation of the statute. The second report will be an evaluation, and the third report will be a set of recommendations for action going forward. The draft first report is available online for public review and input, and the team is continuing to collect and consider input for its final draft report. During August, the evaluation team shifted the focus of its activities to developing its approach to the second report on evaluation and the third report on recommendations for going forward. The evaluation team expects to post these reports for public comment not later than November this year, and it's possible that the two reports, the evaluation and recommendations, will be posted together. The evaluation team expects to conduct a limited set of additional interviews as part of its draft report preparations. I know they're very concerned about reaching out to all stakeholders who are interested in the MLMA and how to improve its implementation. And finally, we're going to convene again in November. The next Marine Resources Committee meeting was scheduled for October 14th. It turns out that date isn't going to work because of a variety of scheduling conflicts. Our next Marine Resources Committee meeting is now scheduled for November 17th in Santa Barbara, hosted by Commissioner Richard Rogers, who unfortunately couldn't be with us today. Thanks.
8B, Al Tauscher's Preserving Hunting and Sport Fishing Opportunities Advisory Committee.
We haven't had a meeting, so there's nothing to report on that committee. John, you?
No. I was going to add that we have a tentative date for September 29th for the next meeting. We have a potential logistical issue with that we're going to work out with staff and commissioners, and we'll make the final announcement on that date real soon.
Okay.
8C, Aquaculture Committee. My understanding that has not met. We did receive information earlier from the department. We'll be working through that. We have a couple of public speakers on item 8, Bill James and Paul Weakland.
Mr. President, Commissioners, Bill James. In follow-up on the Marine Resources Committee, it's a so valuable committee because I think if we vet things through there very well, we can eliminate, and not completely, but eliminate a lot of where there's 500 people come up and they get 30 seconds to say what they want to say, and there's another 500 to come, and it gets crazy. So I think if we can go through certain issues that we need really vetting, we can get definitions, figure out what one side is a definition, another, maybe come up with some sort of modification. I do recommend the videotaping if we can, and if the commission would like to see that, I'm prepared to go down to my association and talk to them, and there's a cable committee and putting in a grant to help help that situation out a little bit. So we're trying to be proactive in this, and I think it'd be really valuable just to be able to get, you know, a full vetting of some whatever is the issue. It doesn't matter whether it's frogs, fish, you know, for all the stakeholders. And then you can view it at your leisure, and everybody can look at it. I didn't understand it. Look at it again, and finally, sometimes it takes three times to understand it. Sometimes with me, four. But you know, I have a degree in economics, and I still am constantly reading some economic stuff, and because economists have different ranges depending on who they are, and so all good. But it's, you know, it's the blending and the melding of stuff that you come up with a real good situation. Any questions?
Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, let's talk about the MLMA that was enacted 10 years ago. So we have 10 years of public comment, questions, and concerns that have not been addressed. We don't want to answer some questions, so we're not going to do that anymore. We'll start fresh every time. And, you know, every time we start fresh with a new report, that means that the public comment period is opened again, so that the people have to come and ask the same questions over and over. And that seems disrespectful to the people in the state of California that you don't include all the previous meetings and all the previous comments, concerns, and questions. Nope, that's eliminated. We're going to start fresh, and maybe some of those people won't show up and some of those questions won't be asked again. And let's remember what the MLMA says, that all terms, formulas, and concerns are supposed to be expressed in simple language, easily understood by someone of average intelligence. Well, we've seen time and again that you've eliminated that, and you don't want to enact this over the last 10 years because there are hard and fast rules that you'd have to live under. But so we'll have a new report, and we'll learn some lessons, but we're not going to tell you what the, you know, what really is going on. We're having another report after 10 years. And then we have aquaculture. Oh, yes, aquaculture. Not accountable for any of their past or grievous actions. We're going to let them go and slide again because we want people to invest. We need more investors to buy stock and shares in the aquaculture scam and scheme. And, you know, we've turned in plenty of questions and concerns about aquaculture, but since the committee doesn't want to meet or answer any of those questions, we're going to do like the MLMA, and it's going to be a long, ongoing thing, and we're continuing it out, meeting after meeting, the redundant, repetitious, you know, so we don't have to answer the questions or concerns. Our friends in aquaculture, we're going to let them slide. We're going to change the rules and regulations. We'll manipulate the laws. We have friends in the legislature that will help us out. Oh, want to buy some shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some stock in a Mariculture Ponzi Consortium? They need more investors. We just need a little area, just a small little pond, and we'll show that to our potential investors, and then we'll tell them what a grave thing it's going to be in the future, and how, oh, everybody will be doing it, and we're going to save the third world country. We're going to provide fish that no one should eat because of the antibiotics, the hormones, the steroids that are included in this product. But then we changed the law already, the Pure Food and Drug Act, where we don't have to put that on the label anymore. We've changed that too. Yeah, real good.
Okay, we're going to take a 1 hour break for lunch and executive session, and we'll be back at 12:30.
Okay, that brings us to
item
agenda.
Nine.
Yep. Which is receipt of federal agency informational items. Tony Morton from NOAA Fisheries, who normally attends these meetings, couldn't make it. He sent an email asking that I pass on to you that Ocean Policy Task Force
is going to have a listening session, they're calling it. And this is President Obama recently created an ocean policy task force led by White House Counsel on Environmental Quality Chair Nancy Sutley and the NOAA Administrator Dr. Jan Lubchenco. Is a member of the task force charged with developing a recommendation for a national policy that ensures protection, maintenance, and restoration of our oceans, coasts, and Great Lakes. They're going to have a series of public meetings, and one of the public meetings is in California on September 17th at the Hyatt Regency San Francisco. This is going to be from 2:30 to 6 o'clock. And if you want more information, please go to the website whitehouse.gov/oceans, and that meeting will be webcast also. I don't know if it's webcast by, it is webcast by our favorite webcaster. So whitehouse.gov/oceans will get you all the information on this meeting, and you can actually submit comments over the web too.
John, just a quick comment on that score. The this task force was created by President Obama on Oceans Day in June, specifically tasking this group with developing the United States' first ocean policy ever. It has 30 days to come up with its recommendations, and so recommendations are due virtually by the middle of this month. So this is going to be an important meeting. I will be there, and I may testify on behalf of what the commission is doing on in terms of marine resource management here in California.
Okay, item 9, I have one public speaker card, Paul Weakland.
No, thank you.
Okay, moving on to item number 10, receipt of legal counsel informational items. Our new legal counsel, Rick Thalhammer. I think we had talked, Rick, if you wanted to mention something about Bagley Keene and the commissioners attending. There's a public meeting that's going to be going on in a couple of weeks, and we might have more than two commissioners. Do you have any comments on that?
Right. That's a circumstance that comes up pretty frequently with boards and commissions where outside of your formal meetings and so forth, you have an occasion where more than a couple of board members are getting together, not on official business, and without any official charter determined by the commission in session. In other words, by attending some other function, even getting to speak, let's say, as a commission member, speaking on your own, what the Bagley-Keene Act is concerned with is concerted action by board members in a circumstance that's not publicly noticed as a meeting. And so therefore that's why we're cautious at lunch times and other times not to either discuss commission business in groups outside of the public purview, or when you go to a meeting like this outside, it's certainly fine for you to do that. But you have to be careful not to take any concerted action together with your fellow commission members. In other words, you don't sit together, you don't talk together, you don't give the public the impression that you might be conducting private business of the commission in private. And so my advice to you is similar. If you were going to a ball game together, you know, you all went out to see the local baseball team, you can certainly all go. You can even sit in the same box, but you can't talk about commission business. When you get together in a group outside of the commission, outside of a notice meeting, be aware that the public is observant of that, and to the extent they see you conversing together, it's very easy to give the wrong impression and to give the notion that, oh, they must be talking about commission business. And therefore, that puts us all in a position of having perhaps to withstand a challenge to that as being a secret, non-noticed meeting. So it's basically common sense. You just simply you go to these meetings, You can certainly converse with one another, but do it very carefully, cautiously, openly with others, and nothing at all about commission business. So any questions on that? It should be straightforward, and it should not inhibit you from doing those kinds of things, getting information. The only other thing I'd add is if you do go to these kinds of meetings where you gain information that later is related to a matter that comes up on the commission agenda, then I'd ask that you disclose that in effect an ex parte contact that you went to such and such a convention and either gained information particular to the agenda item. It has to be pretty specific to require that. Can't be just, you know, I watched a TV program and it was about fish or something like that. I'm not asking you to go to any great length. But if we're really talking about developing a policy and you're at a place where that kind of thing is underway, be safe rather than cautious about that. Go ahead and disclose where you went, what you learned to a limited degree.
Right, and if I could just add, this is the relevancy is there's a South Coast Regional Stakeholder Group meeting next week in Southern California, and we have three commissioners that are interested in attending, and there may be some overlap there. So we just wanted to make sure that we were clear and not having any concerns or perception issues. So thank you very much, Rick.
Okay.
Comments or questions? Okay. Moving on.
Well, we have one public speaker card on item 10, Paul Weeklin. Paul, you have two and you have 2.5 minutes left on your 10 minutes, Paul.
Commissioner's Paul Weeklin. Remember back when we had the microphone's turned off, Paul.
Commissioners, Paul Weeklin. Remember back when Mr. Cunningham and the issue of sea otters came up and he was given the detail of investigating the truths and fraud that had been perpetrated on California about the occurrence of sea otters? We have another person from the Attorney General's office now. We know that the ball has been dropped. He was given long and lengthy information, history, documents, log books, diaries of this issue, yet we're just going to leave it hung up because we don't want to ever admit failure. We don't want to ever try and correct the wrongs that benefit us. That is all.
Moving on to item 11, new business. I know of no new business. Boy, the acoustics in this place are amazing. Is somebody mic'd up over there? I tell you. Amazing. Any other new business from the commissioners that you know of?
No.
New business? Okay. Item 11, new business. We had a speaker card from Paul Weeklin.
New business, thank you.
And item 12, announcement of results from executive session. Deputy Attorney General Rick Thalhammer.
During the executive session, there was one item on which the commission considered a request pursuant to the Public Records Act of the State of California for the release of addresses of people who had submitted comments on an item that had come before the commission at an earlier meeting. And the request was that those addresses be disclosed. After discussion of the legal ramifications of that request, the commission determined not to release those names pursuant to that, addresses pursuant to that request. And that's the only action they took in executive session.
Public speaker card on item 12. Paul Weeklin.
No, thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 13, consent calendar. I have no speaker cards for the consent calendar. I have a suggested motion from staff.
Okay. Is there the motion?
Fish and Game Commission hereby approves the September 3rd, 2009 consent calendar item number 13.
Got a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it, and that will be the order.
Item 14, commission follow-up, meeting review and staff direction. I haven't asked my staff if they've been taking copious notes on assignments. I have notes, and what the commission staff does is we meet the Monday following the meeting and go over in detail all of our notes and compare notes and come up with a list of assignments. I don't know if you need any more right now on that. I think we've captured everything, and between all of us taking notes, we will get it all and get back to you on a report on that. I have a speaker card for number 14, Paul Weeklin.
No, thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. So moving on, if you're ready, move on to item 15.
Item 15.
Announcement of future meetings. September 30th and October 1st, tentative. Right now we're scheduled to be here at the Yola Flyers Club in Woodland. If we have, you notice this was a one-day meeting. If we have a decreased amount of regulatory items, we will work on making that a one-day meeting also. More information to come out on that. Then November 4th, 5th here in Woodland. And then December 9th and 10th, we're looking at, I have received direction from the commission to look at a Southern California location, and we'll work on that.
Any comments?
Commissioner Benninghoven.
Question.
If that's going to be a one-day meeting, is it going to be on Wednesday, do you think, or Thursday?
At this point, October 1st, Thursday, is the date that we already have noticed for our regulatory items. So our desire would be to go with October 1st, Thursday. But if we had to move that to another date, we would need enough time to renotice. How many days do we need to renotice a date change for?
10
days. Okay. So I will work with the president on setting that agenda and go forward.
November 4th and 5th is a joint meeting of the...
No, the joint meeting is scheduled at this point for December. So the joint meeting with the Blue Ribbon Task Force, we're looking at December 9th, a Wednesday, or Thursday, December 10th, and because Friday the 11th is a furlough day.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
That's it. Yep.
Okay. This meeting is officially adjourned.
Good job.